Good morning. It's good to be with you all. My name is Sam Altus. I work for closely with LIRS, but actually with Luther Community Services Northwest. I'll explain it all if you come to the Adult Education Hour. That's your teaser there. But it's wonderful to be with you this morning and to chat with you a little bit, first off, about this gospel text that we're looking at and how it intersects, hopefully, with the lives of our neighbors and ourselves and those who we may be called to welcome. So let me start with a question. I'm curious. Did anyone else find this gospel text a little bit humorous and a little bit funny? Maybe it's just me, but I don't know if you caught, there's a little section in there where Jesus and his disciples are having this interchange that sort of struck me as a little bit funny. I don't know if you caught it. Jesus' disciples just had their world turned upside down. So they had been following Jesus, and he is crucified, and then they're like, okay, this movement's gone, we're gonna try to figure out what to do, and all of a sudden he's there with them again, and they're having all these emotions. The text said they felt joy and wonder and doubt all at the same time. And in the midst of all of these emotions, trying to sort out what's going on, Jesus is like, hey guys, do you have anything to eat? It just feels out of place, right? I mean, sense the mood a little bit, Jesus. These guys are going through this angst and this crisis, and Jesus wants a snack in the middle of all of this. It just feels odd. I can relate to that, Jesus, as a side note, though, just wanting a snack at random times. I feel like that's a Jesus that I connect with pretty deeply. But beyond being humorous, there was a point to this, this text, at least for a first century reader. So for someone who was schooled in Roman or Greek thought, they would have looked at this and they would have seen this account of Jesus' disciples seeing Jesus, and they would have thought, this is definitely a ghost. So knowing or believing in ghosts was sort of a common thing in that time. And so they would have thought, okay, they didn't really see Jesus, they saw a ghost. But also, everyone at that point knew or thought they knew that ghosts couldn't eat anything, which is an odd assumption that we may not share with them. But this was sort of a proof for them at that point in time that, okay, Jesus really did resurrect. He wasn't a ghost. He ate the fish. This happened. Now, I don't know about you, but that doesn't actually settle a whole lot in my mind because I don't share those assumptions. I'm not going to get into the nuances of paranormal activity and ghosts and that sort of thing. That would be an odd direction to go. But I don't share the assumptions of 2,000-year-old folks in terms of ghosts and what they can eat and who was a ghost and what wasn't. So that raises the question, what do we do with this text? Do we just throw it out and say, okay, well, we don't share those assumptions, so we might as well just forget about it. It was a nice story. I don't think so. That would be also a pretty depressing sermon to give at this point. I think there's more there. As is often the case, the sort of first layer of meaning of a text is helpful, but maybe not the most compelling or interesting for us. To borrow an analogy from ancient rabbis, they used to say that scripture is like a 1,000-sided diamond that reflects the light of the divine, that you can turn it, and as you turn it, it'll reflect that light in different ways. That light, that divine light, will take on different shapes and tones in all sorts of interesting ways. And so scripture, we can turn it and see the divine light in different ways. And so I'd suggest when we turn this text, when we look at it, we kind of walk around it, we're going to see some interesting things that may be compelling for us. This may be a bit of an overstatement, but when I start to sort of turn this text, when I start to walk around it a little bit, what I end up seeing is almost the entirety of my spiritual life in a really simple exchange. And again, that may be a bit of an overstatement, but did you catch just in verse 41 or so, there's this interesting exchange between Jesus and his disciples where it says, Jesus' disciples felt joy and doubt and wonder all at the same time. Sometimes it feels like those are the primary emotions of my spiritual life, and maybe you feel those emotions as well, or those feelings in your spiritual life. You feel joy, those times where you feel so deeply connected to God, where it makes sense, where you feel alive in your spiritual life. Sometimes, though, maybe you feel doubt. You wonder, like Jesus' disciples, if you are crazy, if you are seeing things, if you are a religious nut to some degree. Maybe that's just me who feels that sometimes. And then you feel wonder. You feel this sense of connectedness, that everything is connected and sacred and divine, and that it's a miracle just to be on a tiny rock in the corner of an ever-expanding universe. And what this text does for us, I think, is gives us permission to feel all of those things at the same time, so that your spiritual life can encompass joy and doubt and wonder all together. And so first off, when we see this text, I hope that you feel permission to feel all of those things at the same time. But what this text does is something interesting, because it doesn't keep us there. It doesn't just keep us in our heads. So Jesus' disciples are feeling all of these emotions, these doubts, this joy, this wonder. They're sort of floating at 10,000 feet in their own heads and their hearts, trying to figure out what's going on. And Jesus brings them back down to earth with one simple question. Do you have anything to eat? I'm hungry. And I think that's what this text is doing for us, is bringing us back down to earth. It gives us permission to feel all of those things, joy and doubt and wonder. But in the midst of all of that, it also asks for a pretty tangible response. When you hear Jesus ask that question, do you have anything to eat? Maybe Matthew 25 is ringing sort of in the back of your head, where Jesus says, whatever you did to those on the margins of society, whether you fed them, clothed them, visited them in prison, you did to me. And so I don't think it's a stretch for us to say when Jesus is bringing his disciples in the midst of all of their doubts and wonder and joy back down to earth to do a simple, tangible act of hospitality that's in front of them, then we may be asked to be doing the same thing today. To see just a simple, loving, hospitable, gracious act that is in front of you and responding to it. This text may even suggest that that sort of just tangible, simple action is the appropriate response to any of those emotions that we're feeling. So if you're feeling joyful in your spiritual life right now in this phase, then that joy hopefully will overflow into loving action for your neighbors. If you're feeling doubt, if you're not sure about your faith, and if any of it's real, then put it to the test. Following Jesus is as much a way of life as it is a set of beliefs. And so see what it actually looks like to turn the other cheek, to feed your neighbor, to visit someone in prison. And if you're feeling this sense of wonder where everything is connected and everyone has the presence of the divine in them, then it only makes sense to honor that presence through tangible acts of love. And so I think this text is asking us, what is that simple, loving, gracious act right in front of us? Now, I don't know about you, but I can feel a little bit daunted by those invitations that both Scripture have and folks have for us to do an act of love, an act of service, because you're probably busy, I assume. Maybe it was hard for you just to get here this morning, to get your family out of the house and here. Well, this text, I think, provides us a little bit of comfort or a little bit of guidance, because Jesus asks something from his disciples that is very well within their grasp. He asks for food. If you look at some of the other gospel accounts, you'll know that Jesus' followers were fishermen. And after Jesus was crucified, they started to fish again because they didn't know what else to do. And so Jesus says, do you have anything to eat? And of course they have something to eat. They've been fishing. He asked for something that's well within their talents and gifts and abilities, a simple act of love and hospitality. And so I don't think this text is asking us to change the entire world quickly, but it is asking us, what are you uniquely equipped to do? What simple act of love and mercy for your neighbor are you uniquely equipped to do? What is sitting right in front of you that is asking for a response? Who is asking to be fed, clothed, loved, welcomed? Can I make a really biased suggestion? I work with refugees. Refugees are in your neighborhood. Everett is one of our hubs for refugees in this area. And so it's very possible, I think, that the simple, loving, hospitable act that's right in front of you may be welcoming refugees to your neighborhood, in your area, teaching them English, having a meal with them, helping them find a job, giving them a ride. Maybe that's not it. Maybe you have some other simple act right in front of you. But whatever it is, I think this text is asking us to respond. Whatever you're feeling in your spiritual life, whether it's joy, wonder, doubt, or some mix of all of those things, the faithful and the appropriate response is that simple, loving act of mercy in front of us. So friends, I hope we will take that step in our lives.